Hey guys, welcome to the Challenge Podcast. I'm Coach Steve.
And I'm Coach Nick, and we're going to be talking about everything fitness, health, and the challenge.
Let's get on with the show.
What's up guys, Coach Steve here, and welcome back to another episode of the Challenge Weekly Show. I'm here joined with our co-host, Coach Nick. Nick, how are we doing today?
I'm really well, Coach Steve. What number podcast is this?
Nick, it has come that time when we are having our midlife crisis. It is episode number 50 of the Challenge Weekly Show. Big 50. How exciting, Nick. We made it there.
Awesome. I'm going to celebrate my midlife crisis by deadlifting.
Deadlifting? How about you? I think I'm going to buy a Ferrari. Yeah. Or maybe a boat. I think it's time for me to buy a boat and do some deadlifts on a boat.
Yes, deadlifts on the boat, though. Even if you had a Ferrari, you'd buy it, and then in the afternoon you'd still go and deadlift, wouldn't you?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Deadlift for Ferrari, naturally.
Yeah, obviously.
So, Nick, here's a funny story. You probably know this, but I used to work on a cruise ship, right? So I used to work on the Disney Cruise Line, which is really fun, and I used to work in the gym area on the cruise ship, okay? And when the ship was sailing at sea, it was horrible to try to train. So there was luckily enough lots of like machines. So you strap yourself in and you're doing some machine work. Okay, happy days. But then they had like a dumbbell rack. So if you're trying to do anything from like a bicep curl to a chest press while the ship is sailing, it was like horrible. You're all over the place, right? And then I thought, okay, well, what if we just do it when the ship has ported, right? So you port at a port. And it was the same, you know, they just had gentle rock from side to side of the ship, and you're trying to do like curls and you're wobbling all over the place.
Wow.
So that was an interesting, and I don't know if that made me a better lifter because it challenged my stability.
my gosh.
Yeah, yeah. It just highlights that, you know, if you really want to create strength, you need to be stable. And one way to get rid of the stability is to be on a boat. So for this 50th episode, as much as I'd love to deadlift a Ferrari on a boat, it might not work out that well. Oh gosh.
Well, look, if we get to 100, which we will, that's when you can deadlift a Ferrari on a boat in your nursing home.
In my nursing home.
Podcasts.
Well, that will be the Centurion, Nick. That'll be a fun time. That's only a year away if we do one a week.
Yeah, we're nearly there.
That's it. 2023, the episode number 100.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm excited. So 50 and 50 rolling. We've got so much info today, don't we?
Yes, it's going to be a fun episode. Mm-hmm. Now, firstly, another big exciting moment is that it is week one of the January challenge. We've made it through prep week and the challenge has officially begun. Well, it technically started yesterday. If today's Tuesday, the way this is getting released, started yesterday, which is awesome. So congratulations to everyone who survived prep week, and congratulations to everyone who's starting the challenge this week. And you know, we're excited to see what you can do over the next 12 weeks, where it's going to be tough. It's going to suck at times, but you know, think about what we're trying to achieve. We're trying to transform our body. We're trying to improve our body composition. Maybe we're trying to improve our health and our fitness. Or maybe we're just trying to look good naked. They're totally fine goals. We've got 12 weeks, 84 days. We're going to get there. It's going to be fun, Nick.
That's right. And we're trying to teach you about the long game as well. So sometimes it's a lot of info, but if you can sort of start to unpack it all, you will have the tools to be a beast forever.
That's right, Nick. Yeah. And it's similar to, let's say, like a swimming pool, right? You know, you go to like a normal recreation center, the swimming pool, there's like the really deep pool, there's maybe like that little toddler's pool, there's maybe like the kind of program pool where the kids do the swimming lessons, and maybe like there's another funky pool and a water slide and stuff like that. You've just walked into a swimming pool and maybe you know how to swim. Maybe you swim out in the ocean and, you know, going to the pool is fun. It's awesome. Great. So you jump straight into the deep end and you, you know, do your laps. Others, maybe you just want to dabble in like the kids' pool, and others, you know, freaking out because of the toddler pool and all the water splashing in your face. It's exactly the same here at the challenge, where some people come join us where they've, you know, been swimming for years and they jump straight into the deep end. They do a backflip and they're off swimming. They're, you know, 3 or 4 kilometers like Nick does on the weekend, right? maybe not swimming right now. Hey, Nick.
Tumble turns, everything. Yeah. You know, when my goggles are not leaking.
Yeah. Oh, that's the worst. But then others, and I totally understand, you know, you might have just been the first time you've ever walked into a swimming pool and you're freaking out because there's so many pools, you don't even know where to start. And maybe you just don't want to get your hair wet, but you're okay with tipping your toes in. That's okay. So I understand and I completely sympathize with anyone who's starting the challenge this week or last week, and you know, you're just completely overwhelmed with information, because we kind of start everyone maybe in like that maybe kids pool where, okay, we're going in, we're at least waist deep now, we're all in the water. Where some of us might have been like, oh, I'm not sure, I've never done this before and I just want to dip my toes first. So for those people, I completely understand. it's okay, we're going to be fine. And then for others, maybe you've jumped in and you're expecting to be swimming laps, but hold on, like we're working on the basics right now. And sometimes, Nick, we do need to work on the basics, right? We need to work on that foundation so that we can get back to doing tumble turns. And I'm sure you've done that in your own training, talking about swimming specifically, where maybe you did take a few steps back, work on your stroke, and then get back into the long game.
Absolutely. Always. There's always stuff to work on, always. So, yeah, you always need to analyze where you're at and understand that there's always going to be someone in the fast lane that's right behind you. And you just got to sometimes let them go past, take a deep breath, and just do your own thing.
That's right. That's right. Now, over the prep week, it was a great time for many of us to, you know, absorb some information and to ask lots of questions. And already there's been like lots of discussion on places like our forum. So if you're still unsure, or maybe you're unsure of where to start the learning process, maybe you've done a few challenges listening to this and you're like, oh, okay, like where do I start? Like, I want to get better. Where should I go? The first step that I would recommend is to stop off at the forum. So the forum's on the challenge website, both on the Max and the Maxine challenge website. And you can go check out some of the other conversations that Nick and I have been having with other challengers about challenge related challenges. So questions such as, you know, how do I work this nutrition program? How do I change the training program? Cause I'm a little bit injured. Would it be better if I lift with heavier weights or light weights? So there's lots of different types of questions coming up. And if you want some, unstructured learning, that's the first place to start.
Definitely. And it's a lot easier to find than the social group, because sometimes people will ask questions even in an already going thread and we might miss it. But in the forum, it's got a heading, it's nicely organized, and we can definitely cover it. Between the two of us, we'll be able to answer you and in a timely manner. So that's where you should go.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
Like our Facebook social hub is a great place for, you know, motivation and inspiration, you know, engaging with our challenge community. Awesome space. But, you know, there's lots of people in that group, you know, lots of posts get buried, lots of questions get buried. And lots of times I don't even see posts on there because I'm spending a lot of my time on the forum. So if you are wanting a more technical question answered, I would recommend ask it on the forum. Coach Nick and I or the challenge team will give you an answer. And I can guarantee that answer will be of quality. Whereas on the Facebook group or on Instagram or any other places where you're engaging with us, I can't guarantee that answer is going to be the right answer. And sometimes the answers that are given out online are kind of misleading and almost leading us in the wrong direction. So we do need to be cautious about where we find information, especially around fitness, because there's lots of zealots out there that are preaching some weird and wacky things. So we just need to be cautious about where we're getting that information.
Definitely. And like, if I see something that's not quite right on the Facebook group, which I mean, I don't sort of look at it back to front, but I'm not also going to get into a massive argument because I want everybody to be able to have their voice, but I will give the correct information on the forum. So I don't want to ever say to somebody, no, that's not right, unless it's something absolutely hideous. So it's really better to just head onto the forum and you know that it's going to be in line with our values and beliefs. And, you know, we've got your best interests at heart long term, but both of us. So that's where you need to be.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, we were speaking a little bit about the challenge. At the end of the day, it's a competition. At the end of the day, it's a body transformation competition. And at the end of the day, Coach Nick and I are doing what we do because of the amazing results that you get. So it's in our best interest that we give you the best information so that you can get the best transformation so that Nick and I can stay in a job. So, you know, the point is that we're not trying to be malicious. The information that we're giving you isn't trying to be misleading. I can touch wood and swear to God that I'm trying my best to give you the best information available and not mislead you, because I genuinely want the best for you so that I can maintain my lifestyle.
Definitely. But also like our information is so basic yet, you know, so nuanced, but that is why it's good, because it really does, you know, if you immerse yourself in it, you get to know the very basics and then all the layers from there. So it's not a quick fix at all, but it's definitely puts you on the road to swimming those laps.
That's right. That's right. We're starting to just bubble our head underwater, and then before you know it, you'll be swimming laps. No, no worries, right?
You'll be doing the Portsy. What is it? Pub to pier.
Pub to pier. Maybe, yeah.
The sharks.
Okay, Nick, we've got lots of questions to get through today, but first let's go over our non-scale victories for the week. So our non-scale victories are those victories that aren't really linked to the scales or how much weight we lost. So that could be, you fitting in pants that is a different size to what you used to fit into. Maybe you're noticing you're getting stronger, more confident. People are giving you compliments. So Nick, let's go through some non-scale victories that we found this week. Do you want to take us away?
Sure. So I found Joanne Brooks. Now, it's a visual one, but what I like about it is she's motivating herself with something from her past, a picture of herself when she felt really good. So she's written, "Photo on the left is just 5 years ago and is my inspiration. I want to get back there, feel fit and healthy and more like me. I'm really looking forward to getting back to the gym and focusing on my health, bring on the next 12 weeks and beyond." So I love that because it was just so positive and it's got a specific goal that she can look at. She knows that she's been there before. She knows how she felt when she was like that. And that's all the different things, a visual, a feeling, all those sorts of things that she can hold on to as she progresses.
That's awesome. I love that. I love that.
Good one. Next one, Tracy Berry. She says, "Time to refocus and get myself back to where I feel most comfortable and confident." So that's another one of those. So it's really good. I love that. 1K swim, there you go, early this morning, and 10,000 steps to get started. So Tracy's already leading the pack with the swimming. Today's all about swimming.
That's it. Just keep swimming. Just keep swimming.
So 10,000 steps to get started as well. So I'm a very much an early person as well. There's a lot of chats going on in the Facebook group about being an early morning person and how to do that and how to actually be one. And I don't even think you have to be one. I think you just have to immerse yourself into just waking up. So I love that. I love the fact that there's someone leading the way, showing us what to do. 10,000 steps, get started, bang, like that. I just clicked. So I don't know if that's going to be edited out, but click. And so the next one, Elaine Hudson. So she says, "I just did my first circuit training class in, I think it's been about 4 years, non-scale victory. Stuff you, brain tumor. Stuff you, dodgy knee replacement. I'm back." So, well, what can I say to that? That's pretty good.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Congratulations, Elaine. That's cool. That's awesome. Like, yeah.
Elaine, I can't even imagine. So, good on you. And your positive thinking is going to make you absolutely get healed all over and go to the next level. So good on you, Elaine.
So good. So good. Nick, I found a couple this week. So the first one goes to Alex Chapman. Mm-hmm. And she writes, "Took about an hour to talk myself into doing the exercise bike. Was feeling low in energy and bit there. Finally said, okay, just get on and do 10 minutes. Better than nothing," she says. "Anyway, did the full half hour and felt so good after it. The endorphins were pumping. So glad I did it. Had some choc honeycomb burn afterwards for the first time. Was absolutely delicious. Wish I'd tried it earlier." And I love this one because it's a nice way to kind of, in a nice way, lie to ourselves, to tell ourselves, okay, I'll only do 5 minutes, or I'll only do 10 minutes, or I'll only do 1 minute. And then you may find that once you get 10 minutes in, that it's easier just to keep going. So the hardest part is always starting. So if you're struggling to start something, like get on the bike, maybe you are feeling low in energy, tired, don't want to do it, be like Alex, tell yourself just to do 5 minutes or 10 minutes, and you may find that half an hour swings by and you feel awesome and you can go have some choc honeycomb burn afterwards. How good.
That sounds like an awesome way to start the day. I love it. And definitely I fool myself every single time. If I'm doing anything for any reason, if I'm doing anything over about 10 reps for anything, I have to pretend that I'm starting again. So yep. I actually recount for myself. Yep. I go 10 and then I go 1.
Yeah. Do you ever do like, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 when you're doing 10 reps? Yep.
Oh,
yep. So
yeah, it's like the countdown.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And if somebody counts me in a weird way, like if they do it, it throws me. I can't. So I have these little tricks all the time. And I even with heavy weights, like particularly squats and even deadlifts, I say to myself, oh no, this is just your warm up, it's fine, It's we play tricks with ourselves. We have to.
Yeah. I really struggle when I stop at, let's say, like 7 reps. I'm like, it's not a round number. It's got to get to like 8 at least. So, you know, if I'm doing like, let's say, like a higher effort squat or deadlift and I've was aiming for 6, but then I got that 7th out. It's like, I can't stop at 7. I've got to get at least 8. And then, of course, you get to 8 and you're like, well, I'm 10. So close to 10. I might as well. Yeah. So.
And damn. Then you go, oh, 12. And then it ends up being something ridiculous. It's like, yeah. Crap.
Exactly. Yeah. This damn moving goalpost nonsense. It's just, gotta love fitness sometimes.
Yeah. See, everybody, it's not just you guys that think like this. It's us as well. Like, you have to do this stuff. This is all normal.
Back to our NSBs. The next one is Bo Bradbeer. What a name. And Bo writes, go anyway, he says. Even if every fiber of your being is screaming to run away, cop out, cheat, do anything else, go do it anyway. Because once you're done with the hard part, walking through the door, the rest is going to work out for you. And I like this one because once I saw it, I was like, oh, it's so similar to Alex's post where the hardest part is starting, right? The hard part is just walking through the door and getting it done, and then the rest will work out for you. So similar to Alex, Brad writes it as well. If you are feeling down, you can't be bothered going to the gym, you can't be bothered going out, getting your steps up, maybe it's too hot, too cold, wherever you are in the world, just getting started is the first step. And then once you're out the door, you probably find that that's the easy part is to keep on going. It's almost harder to then stop afterwards. So I like that post. Yeah,
absolutely. And what a great one to start the challenge with, because you can always go back to that anytime and go anyway. Yeah, that could be your motto.
And the last one here is Juanita Davis.
Juanita.
Or maybe the J is the, oh, it's pronounced as a Y. Juanita.
I think it's Juanita.
Juanita. Yeah. Got to get a little bit, maybe. I'm doing a little bit like, ooh, Juanita. Okay. Yeah. So she writes, I really feel good about this challenge. I've done so many Maxine's challenges, but never completed or never got anything from it. I was scared. What if I failed? What if so many what ifs? Doubt of myself was my enemy, she writes. Now I know that I need to concentrate on the little steps. Every day has to be a little bit better, and that's what I'm aiming for, to be better than yesterday, to grow emotionally and to be stronger minded. And I like this one because maybe it's not like a non-scale victory on paper, but it's non-scale victory, you know, for us mentally, where, you know, understanding that, okay, in the past that we might have suffered from what if itis, where it's like, oh, what if this, what if that, and I'm scared and I'm not sure about this, maybe it's too hard, maybe it's maybe you feel like you're not good enough to do this and you ultimately end up failing. And Juanita is trying to communicate to us and saying, hey, every day, you know, if you're just that 1% better every day, and that's all that really matters, it's you versus yourself, and it's all about constant improvement emotionally, mentally, and everything in between. So that's awesome to see that Juanita is on her way to be a better version of herself over the next 84 days.
Perfect. Good on you, Juanita. So you need to revisit this every single time you feel like quitting. You need to read this about yourself.
So good.
That's the way you're going to do it. Bang.
So a big congratulations to all of our non-scale victory participants this week. If you notice your non-scale victory, let us know. You can post about it in your journals. Nick and I scroll through that every day. You can post about it on your Instagram, on our Facebook social hub, you know, anywhere online, I'm sure we'll be able to find it. Use the hashtag NSV so we can definitely see it. But yeah, I think it's important to look out for those non-scale victories, especially when sometimes the scales kind of have a mind of their own sometimes. And it's might be better to start looking at other areas of our improvement in our life.
Correct.
Now, Nick, let's move on to our next segment here, the Coach's Corner. So in the Coach's Corner, Coach Nick and I can offer our tip for the week. So Nick, what advice do you have for us?
Okay. So, oh, by the way, today I think I'm 2 protein shakes deep. So I'm very, very on fire and probably 3 coffees in. So look out. Okay. So this is the hierarchy of nutrition. And I'm just going to make it simple for just anyone who wants to learn more about nutrition, about food, about how it works, about what's important, what's the most important, because sometimes people will dive in and go, well, I've got to buy, and we work for the supplement company, of course, and we love our supplements, but you don't need to buy all the different things and sort of think that that's going to help you. There's a lot of stuff that you can do, as we were saying with the foundation of the house before, a lot of things that you need to do to then actually optimize the effects of those supplements, which are at the very top of the, imagine I've got a triangle, a pyramid, the supplements are at the top. So I'll just talk it through. Now, the first thing is what's really important, and there's like, there's pretty much no getting around this unless, you know, there's maybe some outliers somewhere in some studies, but I don't think so. A calorie deficit is what's going to lead to fat or weight loss. Now, we want to mitigate, we want to minimize muscle loss, and that is why we have the calories going down gradually over time. That's why somebody had written in the forum, can I please jump to week 9? And it's like, you can't, because you are just missing out on that first little drop and you're going straight to the other drop. Where to from there? Where to from there? And also, what if you lose a whole bunch of weight, or, you know, feel really good on those higher calories? You know, that's, we're always taught to eat less. Anyway, so calorie deficit is fat or weight loss. Very important. Remember that, no matter what anyone tells you. Maintenance is technically no loss or no gain. If you've been training for a long time, you can probably recomp a little bit, that sort of thing, but it's going to take you some time. So it's that kind of thing where if you're happy with your physique and you're feeling good, you can live at maintenance. You know, if you want to have some a Christmas break or something, you can live at maintenance. Maintenance is like where the aeroplanes park for a little while and get fixed. I don't know, like in the airport, they have maintenance. And a surplus is weight gain, muscle or fat. And people say, I want to build muscle, but I don't want to gain fat. Well, that's true, don't we all? Now, perhaps if you're enhanced, you know, like taking a whole bunch of other stuff, which we're not, there's probably some chance that you could do that. But with us, we have to play the long game, and you are going to gain some muscle and some fat. You want to keep an eye on all your numbers so then, you know, it doesn't go too out of hand. I just needed to say that that's the basics, the very basics. Now, how do we achieve this within our goal, like within our food? So I've explained what you need to do with your food, you know, deficit, maintenance, surplus. Firstly, consistency. So there's no point in having everything else, but you're not consistent. If you say, I'm going to have oats for breakfast, but you have it one time a week, and then you forget, and then you binge eat in the afternoon, even though your plan is in front of you, you're not being consistent. So we need to stay consistent. And that's the same as when people say weighing raw or weighing cooked. It doesn't matter so much as long as you're consistent. We need to get some consistent data, some baseline data. The next one is that energy balance, which I just spoke about before. Then after that, we've got our macronutrients. So everyone's sort of speaking at the moment saying, oh, my carbs aren't enough, or I've got too many carbs, things like that. Really, you want to make sure that you prioritize protein, and the other ones are pretty interchangeable. So, but see how they're not the very base of the pyramid. Then you've got the micronutrients and the fiber. So they're the other little bits, you know, making sure that you eat whole foods, making sure that you do get your fiber in, because that's, people say, oh, they feel bloated, or, and then they have too much fiber. So you just want to keep your eye on that. And then the timing. So people go, oh, when should I eat? What should I eat? When? As you can see, that's in the pointy end of the pyramid. So it's not going to really help you if you don't have the base of the pyramid. Also, the base of the pyramid is where you can come back to. If you're struggling with everything else, you can always come back to the base, that consistency. And then the top, the very top, is where we live with our supplements. And then with the supplements, I'm doing a triangle. I don't know why, because we don't even, you're watching me do my triangle. But yeah, even there, you know, we like to say, and both of us agree on this, we like our protein, we like our creatine, and we like our caffeine. And then anything else over that is an extra bonus. So that's just something to, you can even write it down in a little pyramid for yourself. Remember, consistency, energy balance, macros, micros and fiber, timing and supplements.
I like it. It's just such a nice hierarchy.
I know.
Of nutrition.
I've written one out somewhere, so I might pop it into the forum, actually, just a pyramid. I did do one. So it's just to remember, and it's good for all of us to remember that if we get too caught up in one of the areas and we forget, you know, if we're going, oh, I'm going to have more fats this week, but then it's like you haven't been consistent or your energy balance is out of whack, it's not going to help.
I like it. Nick, I've got a little bit of advice around habits and habit hacking in a way. Yep. So I call it put your bread in the freezer. That's what I call it. Put your bread in the freezer. And there's a story to this. Okay. So once upon a time, when I was in my early 20s, I was living with a really close buddy of mine who was also a PT, right? And I've spoken about this before, where my kryptonite is anything in like paste form. Number one is like hummus in paste form. I can't be around me. I inhale it. Next is like yogurt. I can't be around yogurt. I inhale it. The other one is our old friend peanut butter. I just can't. It's just once I start, I can't stop with peanut butter. So when I was living with my buddy, personal trainer, I used to always just buy fresh bread from the bakery, have it in the shelf. In our little pantry, and there used to be a jar of peanut butter right next to the bread. And whenever I'd be walking past the kitchen, I would always be almost triggered to have a peanut butter sandwich. I used to love it, right? And I'm talking love it. I used to have like, you know, like half a dozen peanut butter sandwiches a day, right?
Yes.
A lot. All right. So I'm eating this peanut butter sandwich, loving life. And my buddy notices this and he goes, man, you're loving your peanut butter sandwich lately. I'm like, yeah, man, how good is, and you know, he goes on and starts telling me about mentions the calories in peanut butter again. I'm like, oh, screw you, man. Like, I like my peanut butter sandwich. Right. And I kind of mentioned, oh, I just can't stop eating him. I every time I see it, I just have to have one. He's like, put your bread in the freezer like this. And I kind of looked at him like, what do you mean? He's like, well, if it's in the freezer, then it's much harder to have it. You could still have it if you want, but then you have to like toast it or, you know, let it defrost, but you still have your bread, but it's just going to be harder to have your peanut butter sandwich. I was like, oh, you're making sense, right? So now I leave my bread in the freezer because I still enjoy my peanut butter sandwich and I love having, you know, toast. I love having like an egg sandwich for breakfast. These are some things that I really enjoy, but then to stop me overindulging, I make it really difficult to do these things that I love doing because I need to discipline myself. I need to be my own parent sometimes and say, no, you don't always need a peanut butter sandwich every time you walk past the pantry. There's now created what's called friction. It's making it harder to do these activities, behaviors that I don't want to do. Mm-hmm. And that works both ways. So this concept of friction, you know, is making it more difficult to do something we don't want. So let's say you know that your kryptonite is soda. You love a can of Coke. Right. Maybe you store those cans of Coke in your garage. So it's on the other side of the house. It's not in the fridge where it's nice and cold. And every time you walk past the fridge, you're like, oh yeah, psh, and off you go, can of Coke, happy days. It's in the garage, it's warm, it's not enjoyable. So if you want a can of Coke, okay, you can either walk to the garage, drink it warm, or you walk to the garage, put it in the fridge, wait a few hours later for it to cool down, and then you drink it. So you've created friction, you're making it harder to do those things. And then it works in the other way. You can take away friction, making things easier. So this is another tip that I offer some clients I used to train years ago, where I was talking to them about increasing their daily step counts. And a strategy I was recommending to them was, oh, what if you just go for a walk in the morning before you go to work? And they're like, oh, no, it's too hard. You know, I've got to like, you know, get the dog and get the kids and right. And it was almost like this really big list of things that they needed to do to get out of the house. I understood that. And I go, well, what if you brought your shoes to the front door? You left your dog's lead at the front door and a jacket at the front door. And then everything's there. If you wanted to go, it's like, I click my fingers and off you go. And that individual changed their behaviors to make it easier to do those things. They put shoes at the front door, the dog's lead and a jacket at the front door. So when they wanted to go for a walk, it's okay, walk to the front door, everything's there, get the dogs, the kids are off, they go, and then away they went for a walk. So think about ways that you could introduce friction, put your bread in the freezer, make things harder to do things that you don't want to do. And then find ways to make it easier to do the things that you do want to do, such as put your shoes at the front door. So if you are going to go for the walk, it's easier. You don't need to run around the house and get all the bits and pieces and go to the garage and get your shoes. It's all there already. So tip for the week, put your bread in the freezer.
I love it. I love it. And I love that tip so much. I do now crave a peanut butter sandwich though. I just have to say, like, imagine, I just want to say it. Imagine a lovely, fresh, like white bread, soft peanut butter sandwich right this second.
You're horrible, Nick. You're horrible.
I know, but like, I really want one.
That's it. See,
Dave, to make us like a peanut butter sandwich tasting burn bar.
That would be good. That'd be good. Peanut butter sandwich.
Yeah, but let's tell him. Yeah.
Well, if you're listening to this and you're craving a peanut butter sandwich, maybe you should put your bread in the freezer so that you don't run at the chance to make a peanut butter sandwich and blow out your calories for the day.
definitely. And do remember that if you say you had just a spoonful of peanut butter, the chances it's probably about 600 calories worth of peanut butter. That's just a universal peanut butter. That's the way it goes with peanut butter.
Yeah. It's never just one serve or one teaspoon. It's always like a tablespoon or like a ladle or something.
I know. And it's actually as many calories sometimes as like a full bowl of pasta. And it's delicious, but let's just put it out there.
Yeah.
This is the peanut butter podcast.
Peanut butter podcast.
Yeah.
Okay. Nick, anyway. Let's move on to some questions for the week. So these questions came up on places like the forum, Facebook group, and other areas online. So the first one, Nick, you can answer. This one's a pretty good one. Mm-hmm. So this person writes, "Hi, first timer here. I just want some advice and maybe some help. If I go into the goal and choose fat loss, my daily calories are about 2000 calories. Fat loss is higher risk of losing muscle." And they write that as a question. Fat loss is higher risk of losing muscle. Then they say that if I choose maintenance, it's about 2,250, but maintenance is lose fat and build muscle. And the person writes, "I want to lose weight without losing much muscle, but I don't want to sit at the body shape I am now." I'm actually really confused, is what they write. So Nick, lots to unpack here, maybe a few misconceptions about it all. But what advice would you give to this individual specifically, who's a little bit lost about the numbers and things? And maybe you can link it back to the hierarchy of nutrition that you just said.
Yeah, definitely. Look, I'll just say it can feel overwhelming because, your goal is right in front of you. And then to have to commit to one of those, it's human nature to go, if I commit to this, what am I missing out on? What am I missing out on in the other section? Now, if I commit to fat loss, does that mean that I won't have any muscle? And it's great that, that dialogue's now happening with women in particular, where people are thinking about retaining muscle. So that's actually really good. So I like that. Now, it's the holy grail. Holy grail, that's what we all want, is to lose body fat, lean up, and retain our muscle. And, if you've ever done a contest of any sort, you've probably gone, oh, I could do that better next time. So all of us, maybe sometimes we've all gone through dieting phases where we've lost too much muscle. Firstly, if it's your first go at it, the chances are that you're going to be in a pretty good position to lose body fat. So if you take it slow and don't drop the calories too low too quickly and follow that consistency and the energy balance, you will absolutely be in an optimal position to lose body fat. You don't want to sort of jump to that week 9 and go, okay, I'm going to go into an extreme calorie deficit. That is when your body's going to dump that muscle because they're like, I'm in panic mode and that's the most expensive tissue to maintain. So I am going to get rid of it and I'm going to hold on to my fat. That's what it's going to do. So I think in the end we decided that this person was going to go with fat loss because I explained that and that was fine. So if you have body fat to lose, there's no getting around the idea that you do need to do a phase of fat loss. And that goes for anyone, even somebody who's done like a specific strategic bulk as a bodybuilder will still go through a fat loss phase. They're not going to go, I don't want to lose any muscle. They're going to go, I did this. Now I do need to drop some body fat. They're very strategic about it. So the idea is to not go crazy when you are in the other side of it, which is the surplus. You don't want to go crazy and go, I'm just going to eat everything. Like as we were talking about before, the 20 peanut butter sandwiches, because we know that we can. We know that when you start to grow muscle, you get hungrier. You are in a really sort of good position to grow muscle, but also a hungry position. And that's when you can risk putting on too much body fat for what you probably would like. So you've got to be very conscious when you're going through the gaining phase to just keep an eye on your data as well. You do want to see the scales go up though. That's the thing. And that's what I think we need to educate people on, because there's no getting around the scales going up when you're in a phase where you're putting on muscle. I know that you can then lose body fat, but that's that sort of tricky thing, that recomposition, which it can happen, but the scales will go up until you're consciously doing a fat loss phase. So the key here is this person says that they don't want to sit at the body shape they are. So in my opinion, in my educated opinion, in my favorite thing to say to someone is go through a fat loss phase first, get yourself fairly lean, and then you'll be in an optimal position to gain muscle, and not just physically, but psychologically as well, because you're feeling quite lean and you're receptive to eating more. If you first started and you're supposed to be going, you think it's a big diet, and then you've been given all this food and you are told to put on things, you probably will give up because you'll be like, this isn't what I want. You need to get yourself ready for it. And sometimes it takes years.
I like it. The only advice I'd give this person is, well, one, you know, first timer, lots of things to take in. You know, you've just walked into that swimming pool, like we spoke about earlier. You know, we're probably looking at the deep end and the water slide and like the hot tub, and be like, oh, where do I start? This is lots of excitement. I would say that as a first timer, you'll probably be able to maintain, if not build, a lot of muscle just from looking at barbells. So we find that, you know, that true beginner, that true first time, you know, that person that's classically coming off the couch and entering the gym for the first time, lifting weights for the first time, you will develop muscle at a much faster rate than, let's say, Nick, who, you know, Nick's been training for years, and you're at a point, Nick, where if you gain a kilo of muscle in a year, you'll be celebrating. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, other people who are just starting their fitness journey, they'll probably gain a kilo of muscle in a month just from starting with the 2 kilo dumbbells in the corner of the room. So that's the first thing that we need to understand, is that, you know, that will happen. So for this individual, just going to the gym is you're going to maintain lots of muscle. I do want to touch on that idea that, yeah, you know, if you are in a fat loss phase, you are at a higher risk of muscle loss, like you said, Nick. That's when we do need to prioritize our resistance training, you know, training at a high both intensity level and a high skill level, where that comes with time. So if you are maybe that intermediate trainee, and you may be in a mindset where, like, hey, yeah, I'm kicking goals in the gym, I'm going to say in the most humblest way, like, you know, there's a lot more to it. And as you get better, you'll find out there's areas that we need to improve, and we slowly build our skill and then increase our intensity. And they work twofold. So as we get better at the squat, we are able to increase our intensity, which means that we're able to then improve our squat and increase our intensity again. So through a fat loss phase, the higher intensity and the higher skill you train at, the less likely you're going to lose muscle. So, you know, like Coach Nick here, if she's going through her weight loss phase, as she's cutting down for a competition, she's training at a high skill level. She's not losing as much muscle mass as maybe you were 5 years ago when you were training, Nick, or maybe the first time you ever went through competition. And that's a skill in itself. So yes, a fat loss phase does have a higher risk of muscle loss. That's when it becomes more sensitive to, you know, really prioritizing resistance training so that you can stimulate your body to maintain or build as much muscle as you can through that phase.
So true. And also, say for someone like me, or someone who is, you know, when you go through a gaining phase, that's why I'm so careful not to go too much, because then I don't have to go through a massive loss to get back to, say, my goal stage look. And every time I do it, it's a little bit easier because I don't have as much to lose. So I don't have to put myself, my body through as much sort of trauma where it's going to want to drop that muscle. And that just comes with time as well, I think, and having a little bit more muscle mass every time. And it's supposed to be fun. That's the other thing. Like, I would love people to enjoy this because it, like, I love it and you love it. Like, it's supposed to be really, really fun. It's daunting at first, but it's also such fun. And I think the way to make it fun is to really enjoy that training. And say with our tone and shape or lean and ripped, how we've got our circuits, and we'll be chatting a bit about that on the forum as well, about the fact that they are really good conditioning, that they're good for fat loss, but in an awesome way, not just sort of running on the treadmill way. So yeah, just take advantage of those as well. And they're not meant to be easy.
No. Yeah. If you watch the videos, and some of those videos, I'm demonstrating them and I'm like 5 reps in and I'm out of breath trying to talk through it. So I like to think that they're challenging, but if you're kicking goals and you're making it look easy, well, that's awesome too. So you're fitter than me. So I like that as well.
Definitely. Because you can always do more rounds if that's what you think you need, or, you know, just manipulate it so it does feel difficult. But I mean, I know that, like, I can do 30 seconds of an exercise and make it feel bloody difficult. And I know that you can too. So I know people can do that. It's just that thing that I think people just speed up sometimes and don't sort of think about it, because that's how we've traditionally done cardio, you know, to just get it over and done with.
Yeah, yeah.
That's another topic.
Mm. All right, Nick, next question here. Mm-hmm. It starts off with, I'm new to the challenge. So I'll say welcome to the challenge. and I've never used supplements before. I'd like to know why they are needed and how to use them. Are they necessary? I've always been a cardio freak and never really lifted weights. So is that why they are important? I'm really looking forward to this challenge and want to do everything I can to get my best results. I like the last bit, you know, my best results, where some individuals reach out to us and they would say something like, how do I get the best results possible? Where, you know, it's all about what's the best results you can get. So what are my best results? I like that. Okay, but let's unpack it. So I've never used supplements before. So I'm going to assume that this person is talking about sports supplements. So such as the products that Max and Maxine create. So I'm talking about protein powders and creatine and pre-workouts and all the good stuff. But, you know, just broadly speaking about supplements, you know, why do we need supplements? Well, you know, broadly speaking, everything from like a multivitamin to maybe a vitamin B or a fiber supplement, or maybe a fish oil tablet, whatever supplement we're using, like these things exist and can be helpful because of the lifestyle that we live now. You know, if you take your mind back, you know, maybe a few centuries of what history was like, you know, maybe there was lots of farmland, lots of really fertile soil, you know, there was less industrial meat consumption and stuff. So now when we look at the foods that we're eating, like some foods could be of a lower nutritious value compared to foods that we might have been consuming centuries ago. Then you think about the lifestyles that we live, you know, many of us are like highly strong, highly stressed out, living in hyper-industrial complexes where, you know, we're around car fumes all day, living in high rise, around concrete, not around nature, where we barely, you know, touch the ground with our like toes anymore. So, you know, we're moving away from this really nutritious, flourished lifestyle. And sometimes we do need a supplement. It's even if we're perfect, you know, even if we're trying to nail everything, sometimes we need to supplement it with a product that we call supplements. Now, if you take your lifestyle, you know, this kind of industrial complex that I kind of described, and then you throw in this brand new stressor, right? We're throwing you in a gym, we're throwing physical stresses at you. All right, I want you to do squats and deadlifts and bench presses and train yourself hard to a high intensity, make yourself sweaty and puffy so that when you go to sleep, you're tired, your body has to recover and grow and change. That's a lot of stress to put into your lifestyle. So even if you were, I don't know, eating the most highest quality nutritious food and everything was perfect, sometimes we need to supplement that with products. Now, being more specific about sports supplements, an analogy I use a fair bit is that concept of building a house. So, you know, people have been building houses for centuries, and many have built a house with just a saw and a hammer. And it took a lot of manual labor, a lot of work, and a lot of skill to be able to chop the wood required and hammer all the nails in. But now we can build houses really quickly, really efficiently, and really safely to a high standard by using power tools. So we can have a nail gun, or we can have an electric saw. And that's a similar thing with supplements. So sure, you could transform your body, get in really good shape just by eating foods, sure. But it takes a lot of skill, a lot of effort, a lot of time commitment to do those things. Or we can utilize a product or a sports supplement as like power tools to kind of make the job easier, get us there easier. So for this person, why do we need them? Put simply, it makes it easier. It makes it convenient. It makes sure that we're ticking all the boxes so that we can get the job done. And it might end up being a lot more effort by trying to go maybe a whole food pathway than it is just to utilize these, you know, products that we've been able to create over, you know, the past few decades of sports supplements. It's not specifically because we're lifting weights. Any sort of fitness endeavors, any sort of physical stress could benefit from supplementation, especially when we look at all lifestyle factors considered. And how to use them, which you, this person also asked, you know, any product, let it be Max or Maxine products or the ones you buy at Colesworth or, you know, online or wherever else you purchase the products, it writes it out on the label. So it might say to take a scoop before you train or, you know, two tablets twice a day or, you know, a scoop in water before you go to bed, whatever it is, I will invite you to read the label and that will guide you on how to consume those products. So at the end of the day, I would highly recommend supplements to anybody. And that's, you know, acknowledging my own bias that I work for a supplements company. And I would recommend it to everyone from my partner to my mom to my baby boy when he's taking solids. Yeah, I think, you know, we can definitely look after our body better by utilizing these food products.
Yeah, I agree. One day I might do a video of my supplement cupboard and everyone will go, whoa, wait a minute. I don't know if anyone would be interested, but probably, you know, comment on this podcast if you'd like a video of my supplements. But yeah, I agree with you 100% there. And also, yeah, with the why, how do I use them? Like there is no special way other than what's written on the thing. Like there's no special way, like, oh, if you use it like this, it's going to be quicker or better for you. That's not really a thing.
No. And similar to what you were saying about the hierarchy of nutrition, Nick, like, if all your ducks aren't in line, like the supplements aren't going to get them there. Where if you are, you know, not being consistent to your plan, if you are not eating within a caloric goal, if you're, you know, everything's all over the place, throwing in a creatine isn't going to solve all our problems. And that's the same as, you know, even just your overall general health. If you are eating packets of chips for every single meal, every single day, like throwing in a fish oil tablet isn't going to improve your health that much. Like you'd probably be better off just eating a vegetable. So yeah, it really does make the tip of the iceberg. But then that iceberg is pretty important, right? That tip is there for a reason. So we need to respect that.
Yeah. Otherwise, yeah, the iceberg needs a tip. So yeah, work on the iceberg.
And then it wouldn't be an iceberg if it didn't have a tip, right?
No, because it would be
underwaterberg. Underwaterberg. A waterberg, not an iceberg.
Titanic.
All right, Nick, the next question here, a little bit of a long one, but lots to unpack. Yeah. Let's get into it. So this person writes, mindset is a hard thing to overcome. This person writes out their metrics and they said that they've chosen the get strong muscle gain option, but struggling to come to terms with consuming my calculated calories. I want to lose 5 kilos of body fat and to change my body composition from... she's put a little emoji of a square shape to like an hourglass shape. So she's trying to improve her body composition, body shape. I acknowledge what I am hearing or learning that I need to be in a calorie surplus for a little bit of a misinformation there, but that's okay. I am fearful of the numbers and meaning between the different in goals, right? So I'm fearful of the numbers and meaning between the different in goal types where the calories vary from 1700 to 2200. I know, trust the plan, she writes, or he writes, I'm not sure. I tried the breakfast this morning with 25 grams of protein and 70 grams of raw oats and berries. I couldn't bring myself to eat all the oats, so reweighed it to 40 grams. And after this, I was so full. To be honest with myself, I probably eat way more calories than before today with the frantic afternoon binge, which I desperately need to stop. To do the nutrition plan is doing my head in, all the numbers, but on the upside, the gym is a happy place. Look, so Nick, lots to kind of unpack here with this individual. Where would you start in giving this person some advice about? Yeah,
definitely. Also, you feel free to jump in because there's so much to unpack that I could definitely miss something. But I've been thinking about this all weekend, like it just because I love it. I love, and also, okay, so first up, to change my body composition from a box to an hourglass. The thing is, like, muscle gain is, it's not going to change your body composition. Well, it will, but in terms of like the fat loss, muscle gain thing, but it will change your body shape. So underneath things, once you do change your body shape, you may actually look like an hourglass
not a box. So body shape, yes, that's the right path. You know, you it is good to change your body shape. Body composition in a calorie surplus, you will build muscle, but you won't necessarily, there's really no chance of you losing fat. The thing is, what gets me here, what gets me is the bit where, and I love this person because I love this, this is very interesting for us to unpack, the bit where it's like, I can't eat the oats, it's too much. But then later on, and I've seen this with clients over many, many years, but this is an honest thing, which I love, I will binge in the afternoon. So it's sort of like we tell ourselves two stories. We go, I can't possibly eat that food. I don't eat that much. I would be in a calorie surplus for the first time ever eating that many calories. But then there's an afternoon binge, which has somehow led to those excess 5 kgs. Those secret things, those things that we don't track, the things that we say, oh, it's in the afternoon, so it doesn't count. I've been really good this morning. I haven't had anything, or whatever you tell yourself. That's sort of where we have to go, wait a minute. If I just eat the 70 grams of oats, then I probably won't even feel the need to binge later on. So that's the first thing to unpack. And that's something that we really need to think of it as to ourselves when we go, oh, I can't possibly eat all this food. It's like, when it's tracked, why don't you try tracking your binge? And then you can see how much you actually do eat, because that's how you end up with the excess body fat. But like, that's, everyone's been there, all that sort of stuff. And like, we were just talking about peanut butter sandwiches. Honestly, if I wasn't stuck to this podcast, I would have gone and eaten them then. So it's no judgment. It's just, that is how we get ourselves into a situation. Now, the other thing is, I need to say this to be, yeah, to the bit where it says, I'm hearing and learning that I need to be in a calorie surplus to shed body fat. That isn't right. And there's no way that we could say that that's right. Sometimes you do shed body fat when you eat more. The reason is because you might have been in such a huge chronic calorie deficit, starving yourself, that even when you eat more structured, you're still in a calorie deficit. So that sort of is why sometimes people, you know, end up losing some body fat as well when they eat more. But it's just impossible. I mean, you're a scientist, Steve. You tell me, like, how's that possible? It's not possible.
No, you're eating a surplus of materials. You can't be possibly metabolizing other materials when there's excess materials already in your body. So no, calorie surplus cannot lead to weight loss.
That's right. So we must just make sure that, like, nobody's hearing or learning that from us. But what we do want you to understand is food is not the enemy. Food is fuel, and food is going to help you, particularly, like, as you touched on before, Coach Steve, about, like, say, a first timer to the gym. You do need to fuel yourself. You will see some muscle gain. You will see some body recomposition. If you're lifting in a good way, you know, things are going to happen for you that won't happen to somebody who's been around the gym for a long, long time. I was listening to a podcast, you know, 3DMJ, where they were talking about training for 30 years and what motivates them still, because they're not going to see any difference in their body composition. And they were laughing about it. And that's sort of, you know, the other end of the spectrum where it's like, you know, what motivates you to keep going. But when you're here, you're in a really good position to be able to recompose your body a little bit, but you're definitely not going to, in a calorie surplus, lose a lot of body fat.
No. Two things I want to touch on with this individual is, one, you know, it seems like they're freaking out about numbers. You know, to do the nutrition plan is doing my head in all the numbers, they're right, with like a whole bunch of U's and N's. So it seems like some of these numbers have certain meanings to this individual. And sometimes, you know, when you download a copy of the nutrition workbook and you input your specific details and the workbook suggests a certain number, maybe you have some preconceived expectations of that, what that number is meant to be. Maybe you've done a previous program where the person puts you on 1200 calories, or maybe you've done a previous challenge where we suggested that you have 2000 calories, but now it's telling you to have 1500, maybe because you've lost some weight. Maybe you are being more physically active. We're not sure. You input that information into the calculator. So just be cautious about your expectations of that number, any preconceived expectation of what that number means. Because many times, if you're brand new to the challenge and we give you a number of calories, you may not even know what a calorie is. And I say that with empathy, where maybe you are previously having a whole bowl of ice cream after dinner and aren't sure that there's, you know, 800 calories in that bowl of ice cream, but you'd happily eat that after a meal like it's nothing. So sometimes we don't have a connection with what a calorie is. And when it's on paper and it says, you know, 2,250 calories, we kind of freak out and go, oh, geez, that seems like a lot, but we don't really know what that number is. So that's the first point that I'd like to make. And the next one is about this concept of feeling full, like I can't possibly eat that much food. And I do see this from individuals as not a fear of eating too much food, as a fear of just food in general, that food is going to make them fat. And sometimes this individual will turn around and we're giving them maybe, you know, 200-300 grams of vegetables. So that's can be quite a lot of vegetables. And this person will turn around and be like, oh no, I couldn't possibly eat that. So they have this instant sense of, oh, I'm full. When, like what you said, Nick, they turn around and maybe have a binge eating session later. So if you are getting into that sense of like, oh, I'm feeling really full, that's okay. You know, maybe you are physically being full, but then if you take that step aside, maybe that fullness is actually just a fear that the food that you're going to eat is going to make you inherently fat, which isn't the case, because sometimes strategically consuming the right amount of foods at a certain time can be beneficial later, especially in the day, especially if you are wanting to be scared of breakfast and then you binge eat in the afternoon. Okay, maybe there's a lot of fear and emotion in this behavior of just eating that is causing a negative side effect later on in the day.
Absolutely. And you know what? This is one of my favorite things that we've ever spoken about. So like, this person needs to understand that they're helping everybody and helping themselves by writing this. So there's nothing bad about it. It's very typical. So it's not unusual. It's something that was really worth discussing. So we really appreciate that information from that person, and they're going to do so well.
I think so. One last thing I'd say about this individual, and they said something like, I know, trust the plan, which I don't think is fair. I don't want you just to blindly trust the plan. I'd like you to commit to the plan. Mm-hmm. You know, first step, be consistent. Whatever the plan is suggesting, I'd like you just to commit to it, run your own mini experiment on your body and see how it goes. I think it's totally fair and almost expected for you to question it, try to understand it. What do these numbers mean? Why is it like this? Why is it like that? I think that's a great step for growth. But I think just blindly trusting the plan or trusting the process might be doing yourself a little bit of injustice, especially because one day you may choose to leave the challenge and you go follow another training program or follow another influencer online or wherever you end up. And if you are one to just, you know, trust the plan or trust the process with any other individual, you know, we want to have some sort of, you know, critical thinking there and going, well, what about this? What about that? What about that? Okay, I understand the process, and now I'm going to commit to the process rather than just trusting it without asking any questions.
That's right. Especially if you've got questions or little bits of doubt, you know, it's worth asking. It's not like being in an aeroplane where you have to trust the pilot, you know, because you can't really question the pilot. You can't do that. With us, you can. You can ask us questions. You can challenge us.
Nick, last question here. Mm-hmm. The question goes, has anyone seen a huge difference on doing just the intermediate training program? Or do those of you that see huge change do your own exercise additional to that also? I need help as I already do weights 3 days a week, two of which are with a PT. I had muscle repair last year after working my butt off to go from 120 kilos to 83 kilos, but I feel stuck between 80 to 83 kilos now. Why would the intermediate program plus steps and nutrition overhaul not be enough? Look, I do think that this type of question comes up in everyone's mind of, wow, like, you know, some of these individuals get these really amazing results. Surely they're not just doing what's on the program. mainly because when someone comes to the challenge, they may be doing, you know, 10 exercises of 3 to 4 sets because that's what their favorite bodybuilder did, or that's what they've been doing forever. Then they see the training program and there might only be 4 or 6 exercises with, you know, maybe 2 to 3 sets each, and maybe only like, you know, 20 sets of exercise at most per session, where maybe you used to be in the gym for 2 hours and doing 40 plus sets. And I understand that, where maybe if you're looking at the intermediate program, freaking out, surely this can't be enough. Surely I need to do more, especially to see these amazing results. And what I'll say to anybody thinking that is, you don't need to do more. You can simply follow the prescription on your training program, and you can see some really huge changes in your body. Heck, if you were to sit there and look at, let's say, the volume, as in total amounts of exercise that Coach Nick or myself do, you might be like, wow, you know, Coach Steve, you do 3 exercises 4 days a week. Are you serious? I'd be like, yeah, that's all I really do, you know? And you're like, oh, you only do 3 sets per exercise? Yeah, that's all I do. And that's kind of all you need, because there is a tipping point where if you do more, it just turns into, you know, junk volume. You're just wasting your time. You know, that time could have been better spent somewhere else. Like if you want to go to the gym for, you know, 2, 3, 4 hours and do all the exercise, you're just going to be tired. Like if you get 50 sets in and you want to do more, yeah, like that 50th set of exercise, no matter what you're doing, it's going to be of a low quality and a low effort. And you might as well just go home and, do the gardening and clean the house. That might be higher effort than you trying to grab those 1 kilo dumbbells and trying to do a chest press. You're almost wasting your time. So there is a nice fine balance. I think for this individual, they're saying that they already do weights training 3 days a week, which is awesome. Our intermediate programs, most of them are 4 days a week of strength training or structured strength training, with, you know, a cardio day in between. So you may find that you're going to be doing more than what you're currently doing just by following the intermediate program. The last thing I'll say is that just because the name has intermediate doesn't mean that you are going to be getting intermediate results compared to the advanced program, which gets advanced results. No, the results you can expect does not match with the level on your training program. So I could follow the beginner program and still see some progress, even though I'd probably put myself in that more advanced category. If you're feeling that, you know, you're brand new to this and you want the best results, the fastest results possible, and you want to go straight into the advanced program, you don't have to. You don't have to. And if anything, you may see less results by trying to go advanced than if you just started with the beginner program or started with the intermediate program there. So it's definitely that like Goldilocks approach. It can be too much is too much, and, you know, too hot, right? And then doing too little is too little. It's too cold. We just need to find that nice right balance where we're, you know, slowly seeing some progress. We're not beating ourselves up. We're not getting super tired. We're not getting super, you know, overwhelmed with it all and fatigued and all those symptoms that come with doing too much. And we're not doing too little that we're just kind of scratching our head being like, well, what's going on here? And we just need to be like Goldilocks and find that nice right balance with it. And that is what I think is the challenge. It's what I think the programs are, is just that Goldilocks approach. And that comes from, you know, the experience of Coach Nick and I and in running the challenge and coaching people and you know, knowing what works in the body to elicit a change. So part of that is I'm going to invite you to commit to our training program. If you need to add more, sure, add more in a structured and strategic way. You're not just adding more for the sake of adding more. And if you need to reduce it, sure, reduce the load that we're doing in a structured way so that we're you know, being like Goldilocks and finding just the right balance of what we need.
That's right. Just right.
Just right. Just right. Nick, let's wrap it up there for episode number 50 of the Challenge Weekly Show. Gosh, 50 episodes.
Congratulations, 50. And that was a huge one. So I hope everybody enjoyed it.
Oh, yeah. If you like this episode, or maybe it's the first time finding the Challenge podcast, go check out the 49 other episodes that Coach Nick has and I have completed of the Challenge Weekly Show. You can probably learn a whole load of different things and listen to some really dumb stories from us and really silly jokes. but yeah, 49 other episodes of the Challenge Weekly Show. We're here every week, and we'll catch you next week for episode number 51, Nick.
Yay.
51. Yay. Mm-hmm.